Hello. The poem I'm going to read is called I Am a Social Moth. I'm going to flutter into the light now. I want to give it a shot. Here it goes. I want to be graceful. I want to feel at ease. Honesty is what I desire, but I want to skip the chit-chat. Give me a connection, a story, or joke. I'll attempt to relate, I promise. I see you. You glance at me. I look away. Jittery foolishness is all I can muster. As I shudder at the thought of being misunderstood, my inner voice tells me to be silent. I try to talk back to it, but the fear of disconnect overshadows what could have been. Small talk is a handcuff. Where's the key?
Thanks
very much, David. Next up is
Stan Nosh. Of course, I'm Stan. Small talk is a handcuff. I take that home with me. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
reminds all my family what I'm back lying when the next ask you what your family do when I'm gone. Auntie Kathleen's going to be there whinging about them. Anyway, this is called Ruby Dear. Ruby Dear, the dream police are speaking in tongues about the exquisite whiteness of eggs hanging upside down beneath a cloud of light memories that whisper about a carefree secret life in a perfect world a million miles away from the overload of our city's glass, concrete and stone. An animal's moan, this must be the place where angels play a naive melody on every drop of rain, burnt by the soft seduction of sunshine. And ecstasy drugs people like us until the inexorable burden of the world is nothing at all. And a new feeling, akin to falling speechless through the cracks of optimistic warm sheets on an infinite love wave, name you and I as creatures of love on golden plates at the gates of paradise.
Next
up is Queen Heinbock. If I had known I was going to be filmed today, I probably would have combed my hair a little more. it's too late for that. This is kind of a little part of a much bigger poem that I wrote. I took out a bunch of less relevant things, but I'd imagine a lot of you guys can relate to this, but it's for those people who have their little smartphones, and you're up way past your when you should be up, and it kind of dives into that. So here it goes. I should probably go to bed. I have a big day ahead. I should probably get some rest so I can perform my best. I should probably get off my phone, but instead I stay scrolling, my mind in the zone. I'm wide awake, my guilty pleasure, some social media I partake. I move through Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat, and I see things that make my heart rise and splat. Photos from role models, crushes, and weirdos of which I intrigue. I see this girl who's nice, cute, and smart, but she's out of my league. He's everything I aspire to be, but far from what I am. She thinks she's so cool, but no one gives a damn. It's 2 a.m. I can't live like this. It's unsustainable. Judging myself and others makes my heart so breakable. I shouldn't think of thoughts that are hateful, because I have so much, and for that I am grateful. Because at the end of the day, we all just need some love. Snore. It's 3 a.m.
Thanks, Quinn. Next up is Jamie Lawton.
Just keeping with the theme of bilingual poetry, I'm not bilingual, but it's shocking that we have here this week, so it's Irish Language Week. So I thought I'd try to hand it to Coop to a few words. Listen to that, lads, the language is back. We have podcasts and pop-ups and really good rap tracks that challenge the narrative that it is waning. Waxing's more like it. It's time for reclaiming the Gaelic that ancient invaders would take from us. Not that I'm saying our neighbours are hated, but this is our chance to just take it all back in our verses, our poems, our songs and our tracks. And my Gaelic is basic, I need some more training, so I try to rein in my fear of mistaking a Shegu or Uru or Tishal or two, my fear of inflaming a bout of complaining from militant Gwaelgori, sitting ashamed that I left out some Shevaha. All I can say is that if we're afraid of engaging full stop, the rate of revival will drop. We can't let that happen. The fact of the matter is that when the Sassanig left us Kanchanga, they left us with half of our literary hands to be tied up and trapped behind all of our backs. And so just for the crack, I freed up my atrophied glove, and I'll see what it has in the tank. Ní la cúp le fóc le gom, ach fánig ín lomid agus éis lom, tán tseang a bíol agus bèc sí gajó, ma írta éna éin rodela ná éis ló, tá papa quint a dún agus bán am a ní cap, is é sin an am a bheith ag déna van ní cap. Níor yarn a mésta dér a skil get ar fag op ní na ach na bú nís an seo ag déna tina ar an microfón. Ná bíon bail in a host agus tá fisigum go bhfuil cuma le héine acatá sa locht, tá fibanna inoff, tá dína boch, tá dína sleeping rough, tá dína ar na shráidna, ag airí fúr, ag airí floc, ag tár ar gultúr anna tlávachtach, tá ar tianga part in sco, tá an gwaelga ag chapter rasharish, ní is fair ná bí shiri.
Thanks, Jenny. I've got difficulty with the next person's name. It might be Burke.
Charles.
Is it Charles?
Mia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great. Charles.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh. Sorry about this.
Take your time, Charles.
It's all right. And if I was a politician, I'd take over. But no. We're a long way away from Northern Ireland. This is a poem by Paul Muldoon that I wanted to read here 4 or 5 weeks ago and was prevented from doing so. Title poem of this collection, 1980, Why Brownlee Left. Why Brownlee left and where he went is a mystery even now. For if a man should have been content, it was him. 2 acres of barley, 1 of potatoes, 4 bullocks, a milker, a slated farmhouse. He was last seen going out to plough on a March morning, bright and early. By noon, Brownlee was famous. They had found all abandoned, with the last rig unbroken, his pair of black horses, like man and wife, shifting their weight from foot to foot and gazing into the future.
Thanks, Charles. Next one up is Philip.
Because you have a full house of a wonderful audience, I'm just going to practice Paul. The Talking Man. Mocks mine labyrinths in green garments, a substitute for their personal honeycomb. They recycle the threads and knit them into dull rainbows of lime beige yolk and light emerald. They call this cross stitch a talking mouth, which they roll religiously as it's a moving track, one that might hopefully lead them home to the sun where all moths come from. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Next up is Jim.
Just Jim.
Just Jim.
Sorry, Jim. Sorry, Jim.
Sorry, Jim.
Sorry, Jim.
The Night of the Living Share. So this poem is it's actually about my black cat. Her name is Queenie. And I just think, like, with cats, like, they're just lovable pets and stuff, but they're also vicious vampires. And I think it's just the two conflicting things together is what this poem came from. So it's called Queenie of the Damned. We repose by the stove and my fingers glide through her black fur. The room glows orange with warmth and she purrs like a sensuous engine. I begin thinking about the cobra mimicry of my black cat. In serpentine pursuit of a lone shrew in the midnight fields, the silver curlicue of her tail above blades of grass, bending heavy with moon dew that pours off the sky by the bathful. How the shrew carries the feeling of predacious green eyes floating through the night, that vampiric masquerade of luxurious fur, dissolving into nightfall until the night, the widening jaws of night flash a brilliance of white teeth hailing into the skin, the sinew, the theatrical thrill of blood. And with hours left in the night, she leaves the wounded shrew, escape from left paw to right. When her handful of black fur returns from the murder fields, she sits by the back door. Her convex eyes reflect the kitchen light. I see the pink of her miniature mouth crying to come inside. Hypnotized by those pools of ancient Egyptian jade, I open the door and she pounces soundlessly into the kitchen.
Thanks, Jim. And next up is Patricia Walsh.
Poor self having stroke. Some prophecy fulfills itself in a tawdry bedroom miles from here, boring through bedclothes borrowed, on top through shortcomings muttered. So I lay naked between chambers, late night snacks par for the course, finding spots of endless pleasure to be a service is really enough. Sinking buttons for decorum, not lying down in comfortable pups, or dingy holes papered by you, cheap alcohol never running dry. An innocent bed and breakfast harbours me, now wishing to know accents therein, fumbling through cold clothes to high order, counting through effort and failed end. You would have a logical climax, wouldn't you? Most of your assumptions are of godly end, praying for your children to follow your lead, far away as they were, unpaid for. Die disappointment unfulfilled, eschewing the right woman on back of her seats. The dingy buildings, a stage of failure, the years of no, stole your longings. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Next up is Julia Trudel.
Thanks
so
much. I'm just going to say, I wrote this like a while ago, so if it's bad, it's worse than what I write now. So.
Yeah,
okay.
It's just clear.
I don't have a title. You walked so close to me. You smiled and kept your hands in your pockets. I kept mine close by. The cold bit our cheeks until we were sitting inside. We talked so nervously and laughed so lightly. The taste of bitter coffee on our tongues. You whispered, "You're beautiful," your voice like smooth, warm honey. My cheeks flushed and my heart beat, and I'd never had that feeling before. Your green eyes drank in every drop of my face as I drank every drop of my coffee. You ran your hands through your hair, and I couldn't tear my eyes away. You were a closed book, and I wanted to run my calloused fingers across the pages. Our empty cups whispered, "I should be getting back," but I didn't want to leave. You walked so close to me.
Thanks, Julia. Next up is Lily Oyer.
Yeah, Lily.
with no light. Two girls with no knife. Strange looks, kinda shook. Paranoia up the wall. Goosebumps starting to crawl. My friend says, it's okay, we're fine. As I panic to keep my heart in line with the waves of peace. The houses are nice, the greenery fresh, but cars vroom and speed through the streets as if to say, we're here to get you. A cold night with no light.
Thanks, Lily. Next up is Ray Hanrahan.
About the city you were familiar with just appearing before your eyes. It's called the Capital Cineplanks. Yet another landmark of my urban youth has been effaced. Where once stood a cinema is now a pile of rubble, and soon even the rubble will be gone to make way for some temple of commerce or other. Like Sir Henry's, the Lib and the Arcadia, this old haunt is gone, and the city is becoming stranger to my sight. Marx said that all solid things melt into thin air, in this world ruled by money, and the demolition of the capital is yet more proof of it. For years it stood proudly at the junction, advertising its delights to passers-by. Now it is no more, its demise an advertisement of the power of money to destroy what lies in the way of its self-aggrandizement. And there is only a crestfallen hapless poet like me to mourn its passing.
Thanks, Ray. Next up is Carolina Winery?
Yes.
Kutcher.
Actually in Portuguese, and I kind of did a really, really bad translation to English, so I'll do the Portuguese one that's better written first, and then the English version. The poem is called Eu Sou Samba, and the translation of it is I Am Samba. Eu Sou Samba, o samba que vive sem pedir permissão. O samba que canta alto, sem temor no coração. O samba que inclui a todos, todos os que sabem sua dança e até aqueles que não sabem. O samba que não tem medo de ser feliz. O samba que rima, mas também desafina. O samba que pula e mexe sem parar. O samba que canta e dança e brinca. O samba que começa e nunca quer parar. I am samba. The samba that sings without asking for permission. The samba that sings without fear. The samba that embraces all that knows its movements and those who don't. The samba that is not afraid of being happy. The samba that can rhyme but can be out of tune. The samba that jumps and moves without stopping. The samba that sings, that dances, that jokes. The samba that the summer that starts and never wants to stop.
Thanks, Carolina. Next up is Sue Blue.
Thanks, William. We have I am rarely drunk these days. I'm enjoying it. This poem I wrote for everybody who's got the experience of emigrating. It's called Uprooting. Rooting up the family tree, withdrawing embraces tangled in the hair and hearts of loved ones over the growth of time, where the tree became home. taking out each limb, each shoot that dug into the soil here. Your rooting up is mine, as mine is yours. To place it down your tree in some imagined paradise, elsewhere over there, where the grass is greener and branches reach for the new. That is uprooting, bittersweet, unsettling, a leap of heart. Unimaginably big for those who stay, bidding farewell to all you know, being strange and rootless, voiceless, thirsty for grounding. The intensity only comparable to another's uprooting. Your rooting up is mine, as mine is yours. To raise a family elsewhere, far away, removed from the closeness of heart, cut off from the bonds of my culture, in exile from the mother tongue, at a loss of my world, that loneliness. Unimaginably alone, echoless, foreign, unseen, those who have lived it know. And when the family has grown and flown the nest, what's left is silence, unimaginably still. Your rooting up is mine, as mine is yours. And so after years we return, which means again to uproot those limbs, each shoot we've put down over there. And this time we know, can we ever return home? It's an open heart, a leap of faith. Are we uprooting the family tree, limb by tangled limb, dug into the soil, only to never root down again? Your rooting up is mine. You have known my pain, for you have felt the grief of losing and the cheer of finding home. Your rooting up is mine, as mine is yours.
Sammy Corbett.
Yes. Yes. All right, hello. So this is a piece that's still very much a work in progress, but it's based on an exercise I did today in a workshop. So, the working title is I Am What I Am. I am a young sapling dug up and transferred before the roots can properly set. I am a water bug that skitters quickly over the surface, enjoying the sun, but finds the deep a bit daunting. I am a product of three sets of opinions. I am a sponge absentmindedly used to clean up spills on the counter. I'm a wolf carrying the brave form of my younger self on my back. I'm a guard dog protecting a porcelain cabinet, digging my claws deep into the soil to join them with the roots of my upbringing. I'm a choreographer who throws their voice to the back of the auditorium, communicating through shapes. I am a sunflower searching for the light.
Next up is Haley Hughes.
Thank you. So I've been working with Irish and Welsh forms recently, and it hasn't gone well. So instead, rather than torture you with that, I'm reading a poem I read at the Winter Warmer. This is called Growing Old. She wears lavender-scented perfume now, spritzes a bit on her wrists. She gathers her blonde tresses in a chignon, anchored by a ruby-encrusted barrette. How am I this old? She wonders as she zips up her one nice dress. The black one with a sweetheart neckline. Older women would scoff, point to their lined faces, their sagging skin. As the woman carefully steps into kitten heels, she turns this way and that in front of a mirror. Where did the little girl go, the one who insisted on wearing grubby trainers with lace-trimmed dresses? The woman, a calla lily, wonders if she will ever find that little girl smashing rosebuds with a stone to make perfume.
Thanks, Haley. Next up is George Aggie.
Mine has no title, so I will just say it. Time goes by, seasons come and go, friends disappear, and memories are cherished. New challenges arise, afraid to conquer them. Dreams I had seem too distant, but forward I move, pray to the one above.
Thanks, George. Next up is Connor Smithson.
A. E. Hausman, he was a professor of Latin, I think, at Cambridge in the early 1900s. It's from a series of poems called A Shropshire Lad. Into my heart, an air that kills, from yon far country blows. What are those blue remembered hills? What spires, what farms are those? That is the land of lost content. I see it shining plain. The happy highways where I went, and cannot come again.
Thanks, Connor. Next up is Max Creighton.
And I thought it'd be that sadness of her, you know, discovering her soft in her core. I just said I'd do a tiny thing about love dilemmas, different kinds of dilemmas. If I can do it in E, it's fine. Okay. From youth to middle age. Didn't I say you there with someone new? You looked at me as if you never knew me. So cool and classy and so unattainable. No one's got a chance, you're unattainable. And you've broken every heart along the way. You'd chew them up and send them on their way. But they still can resist, the attraction still persists to a criminal who's guilty of committing. Didn't I see you moving on the floor, weaving your seduction spells once more, praying on the sweet ones and the gullible, and laughing as you go, oh, they're so gullible, but you're broken every heart along. I don't want to talk about the weather or traffic lines. I don't want to talk about mundane things that you classify.
good night. Okay.
Final reader of tonight is John
O'Hagan. Yeah! No one better. Here we go.
Yes. I'm fairly sure I want to follow that. So this is a piece actually that I wrote about 3 years ago, the second time I came to Cork, and I found myself sleeping very close to where I'm sleeping now. It's called On Waking Beside St. Anne's. The morning comes in quarters. I do not recall the peals at night, though surely they must have tolled. For God does not suspend her watch, nor man abstain from asking. Outside my window, the birds respond to Belle's request. Tiny picks darting between the green and gray, they thread the worlds together. The birds and the bells, the warp and weft of God and man, each quarter the weaving tighter.